Good morning. Today is Friday, March the 9th. Joining us this morning, Humble Bay Fire, and he insists on interim chief, Bill Reynolds. Good morning, sir.
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I am vertical.
Absolutely.
This morning, we're spending a little bit of time talking about, well, we are going to start talking about budget because I know it's going to vary into different areas. But in the past years, we've talked about budgets and, you know, whether the rollover or zero-based budgeting and do this and do that and mandated this and mandated that, categorical funding. But we've never talked about fire, where it's all general fund source. There may be some grant monies and some matching monies, but by and large, it's a lot more flexible. And I think a lot of us understand fire guys a little bit more than what we do planning or building departments and things of that nature, where it's not as apparent. When you started playing with the budget, what were the first things that struck you as either aha moments or head scratching? Gee, really?
Yeah. The biggest thing that, especially as a young firefighter coming in, you don't really think about the budget. And because you come to work, you get on the fire engine, you go to calls, and that's the most important thing in the world to you. And as you advance in your career and you get more categorical responsibilities, you start learning the small pieces of the pie. Once I got into the position I'm in now, one of the biggest things that struck me is how expensive this operation really is from the personnel side of things. Not just the typical things like wages and benefits, but you've got factors like workers' comp. We're in a profession that obviously experiences a lot of injuries and things like that, and how much that, you know, at the end of the day, really costs the department. Then there's the other things, like you mentioned, like grant funding. Grants are great. Grants are a lifeblood of the fire service these days in order to get big projects to go through. But most grant processes, people don't realize, actually have a matching portion of it. We've been successful in the years past with the federal assistance to firefighters grants that's helped us replace all of our breathing apparatus and things like that. But we also have to basically match 10% of that. So even though we're getting a lot of free money from the federal government, I say free money, we've had to obviously put in proposal and everything, but we basically have to match that with 10%. So for, if you get a $100,000 grant, you're still on the hook to pay 10% of that. So there's those factors as well that people don't always see when they think of grants. So
now it's nice to have that multiplying leverage.
Yes.
Versus not.
Absolutely.
So there are certainly benefits to that. But the grants that the fire department has, are they ongoing or do they tend to be one-timers?
They tend to be one-timers. Most of the time, when we get money, like I mentioned, the Fire Act grant from the federal government, every year it comes up again, there's an application period. And you're in competition for this money with every other fire department in the country. Excuse me. And we basically, as our staff sits down, we look at what our needs are. And we've been fortunate and been successful in the respect. It's several years old now, but our ladder truck that you see driving around town, the Tillard ladder truck, that was obtained on
under 10 years. It's new.
Yeah.
It's still shiny. You don't have to wax it. It's new.
True enough.
Yeah.
But we were fortunate to be able to, buy that on the Fire Act grant as well. So there's, but that was a one-time thing. So then as the year rolls over, we're right back at square one and we have to basically determine what our need is and be able to put in for, what the biggest need is. And there's no guarantee we're going to get it. So
the fact that you've gotten grants in the past from that funding source, does that put you lower on the totem pole next time around, or is every year every project treated independently? And if Humboldt Bay happens to have a really strong grant writer or an awful lot of need, you can get multiples in consecutive years rather than, okay, you got yours for this decade, now we're going to go on to somebody else.
It really tends to be a clean slate every year, and they really look at what your need is. And I mentioned again, I'll go back to the ladder truck. When we were successful in getting that, we were able to demonstrate that our reserve ladder truck at the time was from 1978. It was well beyond its lifespan and everything. We were able to say, we really need this. Then in following years, we were successful again just based on the need. For example, with aging our self-contained breathing apparatus, when we go into a fire, we have to wear our air on our back because we can't breathe in the smoke and everything. So those were basically getting up to their lifespan where they were out of compliance with, their timelines. So we were able to you know, demonstrate the need there. So, and this has been in consecutive years, and this, so it really, you mentioned having a strong grant writer, and we've been very fortunate in our agency that we have people that have been doing this for several years, and they are really good at what they do, and they're able to help demonstrate that case. And they also look at, you know, your community. They look at, you know, it's not just what you're saying that you need. They look at your community profile. They look at your, what's called interoperability with your other fire departments, for example, for like radio communications and whatnot. If we can demonstrate that there's a glaring deficit in that area, we're able to, you know, make that our case. And so they look at it on a case by case basis. And we have, you know, have a, as good a chance of getting a grant, even if we got a big one last year, we've got a good a chance of getting one the next year as well.
The ability to share, does that factor in there too?
Absolutely.
Right. Obviously you got mutual aids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if, let's say the big boy fire truck. Okay. If you've got a community within 10 or 15 minutes away, and that can be used in that setting, I would think that that would be one more on the positive side of the scale to determine that that's a department that would probably benefit more, or the community would benefit more, rather than somebody who's out in the middle of somewhere and they're by themselves.
Right.
There really is not an opportunity to share with another community.
Yeah, and that does factor in. And they, while they don't, you know, look at, when they're looking at our grant to determine if we're going to get something, they don't necessarily look at what our neighbors can provide, but that's up to us to be able to demonstrate that and communicate that in the grant proposal. And within, they really want to make sure that we're all playing nice together and able to help each other out, because they want to do the most good for the most amount of people.
Is that a box, a checkoff box? Plays nice with other departments?
I think it is.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long, on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears, and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill Reynolds. Bill, the concept of budgets, I can remember when I had the same discussion with Gary Philp when he was sheriff, and he was always frustrated because most county department heads would take last year's budget and then augment instead of etch-a-sketch and start from zero, zero-based budget, and go, okay, what do we need? What has changed in the last year? So either to be a higher priority or a lesser priority, how do we make those adjustments? And let's put everything together and see where we end up. What approach do you take?
Basically, I look at what the needs of the department are. And we actually, you know, we're a unique animal in the respect that we're a standalone department. We're funded by the City of Eureka as a parent agency, and also Humboldt Fire District as a parent agency. So we're not necessarily competing with directly with other departments, say streets and the police department, for funds. But the way that we do it is we have our...
But you do have some battle on the city side, don't you? Because you're out of the general fund.
We do. Okay. And it's been very cooperative. We've been very lucky to have them as a partner, in respect that they understand that, you know, obviously we're an expensive operation. Our costs go up every year in the respect of workers' comp and other personnel costs. But the other side of it for us is within our department, being the size of an agency that we are, we have basically what we call collateral duty holders. We have firefighters and staff amongst us that have a specialty in a certain area, say fire hose, and they basically submit what they're submit and they justify what their budget requests are every year, and then our team sits down and we look at the budget and we're able to go, okay, we recognize a need for personal protective equipment. This is, you know, this is basically the lifeblood of the fire department. These are the things that keep us safe inside of a fire. You know, we haven't funded that like we should over the last couple of years, so we need to bump that up a little bit because we have new personnel, we have aging gear that all has a shelf life on it. And so we were able to base a lot of it on need. We don't necessarily do the Etch-a-Sketch approach where we, you know, have a clean slate every year with the budget, but we're able to, you know, being a small department like we are, we have our finger on the pulse of what's going on, and we recognize what the actual need is of certain categories, and we can adjust accordingly from there.
I don't know too many department heads who have said, I don't need that much money.
Right.
So how do you avoid the temptation of expanding your request to meet the need of the, or to meet the dollars that are available, rather than taking an austere approach?
Yeah, you really have to be realistic, you know, looking at how, you know, we recognize that, you know, while right now today Humboldt Bay Fire's needs are number one to me, obviously, because as the interim chief, you know, I'm charged with making sure that we're, you know, able to grow our budget. But we also have to take that realistic approach, understanding that it's not an endless pot of money. And there are other people competing for it that have a legitimate need as well. You know, the Eureka Police Department, their needs are, you know, with our community and a lot of the problems that we have, they have a great need to be able to expand, you know, to get police officers in the door and keep them well-equipped and trained and on the street. So while we'd like to ask for the world, we basically have to take a realistic approach. And again, like I said, needs-based, if we can look at, you know, what our greatest need is this year, and put an emphasis on that, and have that when we have the budget presentations and try to justify where we're requesting things, to make the case for the stuff that we really, you know, these are the things that we have to have. It comes down to, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, and it's kind of a hard thing to say, but there's a lot of need to have and there's a lot of nice to have, and you've got to put that emphasis on the need to have.
Well, and because you're not on an island, you know, you mentioned roads. Yeah. You know, if you're going down and things are shaken free because the potholes are so prevalent, 14th Street. there's some potential damage, or it could be a source of an additional response need. You know, all the car crashes that are going on. If everybody's
absolutely
hydroplaning all the time in one spot, but it's a structural design issue.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's that balancing factor in there as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you could, you know, you mentioned roads, and there's other categories that you can make the case that, you know, typically when it comes to budget time, public safety usually gets the biggest piece of the pie because, you know, of the job that we do. But you can make the case for roads being a public safety issue because, again, like you mentioned, with traffic collisions, with, you know, damage to vehicle, any number of different things, or pedestrian hazards. Those are some, you know, and again, That's
becoming more and more of an issue, isn't it? Guys
absolutely
walking out in the street, or gals walking out in the street.
Absolutely,
getting hit.
Especially down Broadway.
Is it just Broadway, though?
It's, you know, that's the biggest one, just because typically the Broadway ones are a lot worse just because the speeds are a little bit higher than on the surface streets of Eureka, you know, with 101 and everything. But yeah, there is a lot of, you know, we do run a lot of vehicle versus pedestrian calls, unfortunately. But
about the other way around?
Yeah, not the other
pedestrian
way
around. Versus vehicle.
I have seen that.
I don't know. It wasn't full moon necessarily, but in the last couple of weeks, I mean, there are 6th and 7th, which are main drags in Eureka, but not the main drags. They got their head down walking, and they don't even break stride.
Right.
Walking out in front of the street and thinking about if there's a vehicle there.
Right.
And then that doesn't enter the consciousness.
And then you throw in, you know, the smartphone factor where people have their head buried in their phone or are otherwise distracted. And you would think that, you know, as you're coming up to an intersection, people would be more heads up. But there have been times where I've been driving around town and somebody walks out in front of me and they've got their head buried, you know, whether it's in their phone or just distracted otherwise. And honestly, there's been some people that walk out there that just seem like they just don't care.
Yeah, or daring you.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, the attitude walker, too.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of study that indicates that that's just more prevalent throughout the country? Is that something that's just in our area? I mean, it just seems so. I like my knees.
Right.
I like my ankles. I'm not going to go wandering out in front of a car to get nailed. I mean, it just. Okay, I vented. I'm feeling good. It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humble Bay Fire Chief Bill Reynolds. Talk Shop presented by American Ag Credit, CDH Painting, and by Redec. Bill, we've seen in Eureka some of the new signal lights. They're not really new. I guess they're different. They may be new. I don't know. Longer signal lights, physically longer.
Right.
That are pretty much putting in turn options instead of rolling the dice with oncoming traffic and try to shoot across before they get there. Number of those in the past, we've talked about you guys can trigger from the fire trucks turning the lights over so that you can go through. You don't have to stop, you know, honk the horn a couple of times, hope everybody has stopped, and then shoot through each intersection, right, taking additional time for response. Do these new ones have that triggering mechanism with them also?
Yeah, what we've got on the fire engines, we've got an emitter called an opticom, and when we turn on our red lights and siren to start heading to an emergency call, that emitter starts going automatically, and as we approach an intersection, it will trigger the lights to head back to green to give us the green light to go through. So, and the new lights have that integrated as well, so there's been no change for us in that respect. But even though we have that, our drivers are trained to basically not take it for granted. They still need to approach the intersection at a safe speed, make sure that everything's clear before they go through. And plus, the other thing you'll see is we make a lot of noise when we come at that intersection because we want to get everybody's attention and make sure the person that either is listening to their music or is potentially talking on their cell phone actually hears us and sees us and knows that we're coming through.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like the brakes are given out all the time.
Right.
How long does it take to stop a fully engaged, loaded with water tanker truck?
It takes, I couldn't give you an exact distance because obviously it's going to depend on a lot of things like, you know, the road conditions and everything. But you think, you know, the normal fire engine you see driving around town is about 40,000 pounds. And we, by law, can only, you know, even it's fast enough, but we can only go 10 miles an hour over the speed limit when we're heading to an emergency call. So say we're in a 30 mile an hour zone, obviously that's a 40,000 pound fire engine that's coming up doing it, coming down the street at about 40 miles an hour. So, it takes a while. And that's why, you know, our drivers, you know, we always talk about probably the most dangerous job day to day on the fire truck is the engineer, the driver operator, because no matter if it's a structure fire or if it's a medical aid call or if it's a service call to lift somebody up who's fallen down, every time they get behind the wheel of that fire engine, they're in charge of not only the crew's safety, but the public safety as well. There's so much that can go wrong. So that's why they take their job very seriously.
I would imagine there's a lot of training that they do, ongoing training, once they get that position.
Absolutely.
Is it like the CHP driving school, or is it driving around, getting familiar with the rig? I mean, how do they develop or increase their skill set?
Well, it's a little bit of both. Basically, the familiarization with basically driving around town, knowing your geography, knowing how to get to calls, knowing the best routes to get there, knowing what streets not to go down. Obviously, if there's a narrow street that has a lot of parking on both sides versus, you know, a street that's a little bit wider. There's also state classes that before our people are able to become a driver operator of the apparatus, they need to go through classes given by, you know, state instructors basically on, you know, operation of fire apparatus, driving, pumping. And then there's we also have in-house training too that they have to go through, to cone courses, street driving, just a myriad of different things to be able to make them so they're safe to do it. And then after they've completed all this training, they actually, before they're able to certify to be a driver operator and go to emergency calls, they have to do a minimum of 6 shifts under the supervision of a the engine crew, and they evaluate them on a shift-to-shift basis after they've gone through all this training to basically say, okay, this person is ready, or no, you need to remediate some training before you're ready to go. And that's not just driving. That's also with the operation of the apparatus, with running the fire pumps and all the equipment on the apparatus. So,
Do the guys tend to get pretty aggressive about, yes, you're okay, no, you're not okay, where their standards strong because their safety is involved, or does it tend to be a little lax because, hey, it's Bob?
You know, credit to the personnel, not just with our department, but otherwise, I think everybody recognizes that the crucialness of delivering the rig to the scene safely, because if we get into even just a fender bender on the way to a call, we have to stop and check for injuries, and that delays us getting care to whoever we really need. So guys are really serious about making sure that if I'm going to be riding with this person, I want to make sure that they're absolutely the best they can be. So, you know, I think we're really fortunate in that respect, because we do have need of driver operators in our department, and it would be really easy for somebody to say, you know, well, you're a great guy and I like you and we have this need, so we're going to pass you, but they don't. If somebody's
close
not,
enough,
yeah,
isn't.
It isn't. If, you know, if somebody's not ready to do it, their guys are professionals and they say, you know, you need some more training.
How long does it take for true proficiency?
A career. You know, when I was an engineer, I did it for several years, and I was still learning every day.
Because of new apparatus or just new challenges?
New challenges. Definitely drivers, you know, making sure that, you know, you're driving, you know, defensively, making sure, you know, other drivers aren't, you know, creating problems for you, but also new apparatus as well. The apparatus keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the other side of it is too is we get a lot of people coming into the fire service nowadays that they've never driven anything beyond mom's Corolla. So now that this is the first big vehicle they've ever driven, so it takes a while.
KINS News and Information Times 8:41. We will be back.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Fly Humboldt remind you that flying local is buying local and supports local jobs and investment. Fly Humboldt is a community-based coalition of businesses, organizations, and citizens dedicated to getting more flights to more destinations. We know that reliable and affordable air service is a critical part of a healthy community. For more information, visit flyhumboldt.org or find us on Facebook.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill Reynolds. Bill, with the fire trucks and the operations and the moving of them around, do they get involved in accidents on a regular basis?
Fortunately, not a regular basis around here, but you know, we've had accidents before where we've been parked at a scene and a vehicle is you know, run into our pieces of apparatus. We've also had it, you know, moving collisions where not just the people, you know, the citizens out there, but we've had it where an engine maybe takes a corner a little bit too close and clips a vehicle or gets a mirror or something like that. So it does happen. Fortunately, knock on wood, we haven't had any serious injuries from things like that. But we do see on a regular basis around our country, we get updates from, you know, news sources in the fire service. And it seems like on a daily basis, there are serious collisions involving fire apparatus, both the fault of the firefighters or the citizens. And some do result in fatalities. And it's pretty tragic.
Do we know how to drive around a responding vehicle?
Not everybody does. We see, you know, obviously you hear the siren, you see the lights, you're supposed to pull to the right, you know, safely. We've had, you know, I've seen in my experience in the 25 years I've been doing this that somebody panics and they just stop and they don't pull to the right. They just stop right in front of you, or they don't know what to do, so they just keep driving in front of you, being kind of a mobile roadblock. So for the most part, I think people do know what to do, but it's, you know, we do see the people that get a little bit panicked too, and this, and for whatever reason, forget what to do.
Is stopping better than trying to out sprint you?
Again, it depends on the circumstances and the driver behind, because you know, if someone just slams on their brakes in front of us, obviously that could be a big problem. But but the other side of it is, too, is if they try to outrun us and then they blow through an intersection or something and they cause an accident, well, now we're going to stop and see if there's injuries, and now that delays the help and care getting to the other call that we need to go to. So,
what about on the backside? You know, are there people who either like to, because of curiosity, follow, or you? I guess this is probably more in the city, but I remember on O'Farrell, fire truck runs down and it's like breakwater, and boy, you get and the guys are following right behind as tight as they can because they don't want to be cut off. They see it as a quick way to get from point A to point B. Most of them are yellow vehicles. Most of them have, you know, non-Uber,
right.
but passengers. I would think that that has a potential to be just as dangerous.
It could be very dangerous too, because the fortunate thing we have is when we're responding to a call, we know where each other are at. If we're going through an intersection, if we're coming up to a common intersection where two fire apparatus might be responding to a call, we'll call each other on the radio and let each other know where we're at and we're going through this certain intersection. If you have somebody who is trying to do something like that, and we know another fire engine's coming through there, but they don't, and they try to zip in right behind, you know, behind us to have us break traffic for them, that puts our other responding units in harm's way as well. So we don't typically see that a lot around here, but I'm sure it's happened.
What is the biggest challenge with the rigs? Getting the familiarity with them as the driver, or is it the gear, or what would you ask or respond to that?
I think it's the sheer size of the vehicle. I think that it's, you know, again, going from driving your little pickup truck or your car around to driving a 40,000-pound vehicle with lights and siren at 3 in the morning in the driving rainstorm, and just understanding that it's not going to stop on a dime like the little car does, and just the sheer size of it.
And aren't you glad you don't have snow?
Oh, you know what? I can't even imagine.
Different ball game, baby. Thanks for coming by, Bill.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow and on Monday.